Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Fresh Voices, the podcast where we discuss the current week's voices pieces. My name is Julia Pinney, and I am an assistant voices editor. I'm here today with DeJour, who wrote a powerful piece this week titled Don't Forget the Happy Thoughts. It's about how music helps her reconnect with the Black community that raised her. DeJour, would you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Hi, my name is DeJour. I am an assistant halftime leisure editor for The Voice. I'm a sophomore. I study sociology, film, English, and I watch The Office all day.
Awesome. So starting from the beginning of your piece, I loved your description of being in the National Museum of African American History and Culture, dancing with, as you described, my people. Would you tell me a bit more about that feeling of belonging?
Yeah, definitely. So when I went to the museum during spring break. I had decided to stay on campus last year during spring break, and I stayed here with my roommate and one of my close friends, Julia. Same name as you.
It's really funny. Yeah, good name.
And we decided to go to the museum, and when my roommate is a big music person, she also happens to be a very big Biggie fan, which was the song that we were dancing to in this moment that I described.
Yeah, Big Papa.
And,
right?
Yeah, Big Papa, yeah. And so I think the thing that I remember most, and the feeling I remember most, is this feeling of pride, mostly because I still have a video of this. So she starts rapping along to the song. The sample that was played at the museum starts with the lyric that I chose, which was "Believe Me, Sweetie," and then, you know, it goes on. And she starts rapping along to that, like, very how she normally does, very, you know, extra is how I describe her. And then more people were coming in and just started rapping along. And it was this feeling of pride because we all knew the words. And it was like nobody was missing the lyric. Everybody was on beat, and we were all just basking in each other's joy. And it was something that I was used to back home because whenever me and my best friend back home, Cassandra, we took the train together every day, and we would often like play music in each other's headphones and like sing it out loud. And this was something that I felt like I was missing at Georgetown, this feeling of just being able to like sing these songs, and I would know that the people around me knew them as well and can sing with me. But like coming to Georgetown, nobody knows Big Papa. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like in the museum, everyone knew it, and we were all singing along, we were all together, and it was just that feeling that I was missing at Georgetown, and it was really welcoming and very comforting as well.
Awesome. So in the next part of your piece, you actually do talk about your home in Brooklyn. Will you tell us about it?
Yeah, so I come from a neighborhood called Brownsville, Brooklyn, and a lot of people like to joke that it is the last place in Brooklyn that will be gentrified.
Okay, all right.
And that's mainly because of its reputation. Mm-hmm. I talk quite a bit about it in the piece, but I can't remember like the exact records, but I know that it has definitely, at least, I don't know if it's currently now, but at least once in recent times, has been considered the most violent neighborhood in Brooklyn with the most deaths. There's a lot of gang violence. There's different housing projects in Brownsville. I live in the Cephalo housing projects, and then there's like Howard, there's Van Dyke, et cetera, et cetera. And it tends to go in the way that there are specific housing projects and they have beef with each other. So like certain people, like if you live in Cephalo housing projects and you happen to be in a gang, you can't go around Howard because there's a chance you might get shot.
Okay, so
or at least jump.
The gangs are very
based on location.
The members of each housing project.
Exactly. Okay. Or at least something along those lines.
So everyone kind of has their turf.
Everyone kind of has their turf.
Housing project is the turf.
And it doesn't necessarily apply to everyone. Like, I never felt like I couldn't go somewhere. I go anywhere that I wanted to in Brownsville, but I know that my brother, for example, he couldn't go certain places because my brother did have run-ins with gangs and was in the gang for a bit of his life. Okay. And so certain places he wasn't going to go, like Howard or where we used to live. We used to live around the edge of Brownsville. It's close to East New York, and it's called Legion. And we had to move because there was a lot of beef there, and my mom was very worried about Devin's safety. So we had to move back to Cephalo Projects. So stuff like that. So it's kind of like that, in a sense. There's a lot of turf, as you described it, a lot of, like, separation, but also not for everyone, if that makes sense.
Okay. And did you get used to kind of the level of violence and gang activity in your life? Did it kind of just become an everyday thing?
Yeah, I would definitely say that it was normalized in a way that I did not realize until I got to Georgetown. It was a certain thing where I would tell people that I've heard gunshots before, and I have, like, seen, as I described in the piece, bodies being put on stretchers and stuff like that. Police have come knocked on my door to ask me if I knew anything about, like, the recent shooting that happened in my building that week.
You're a witness.
Yeah. And I would say these things very matter-of-factly, just because it was my experience. Like, I didn't know another experience, and I didn't realize until I got to Georgetown, where the majority of people did not have that experience, that this wasn't normal, and this wasn't what people were living every day. So I would definitely say that it became kind of commonplace, in the sense that I sort of internalized everything was happening. I don't think that I necessarily became, like, used to it and that it didn't affect me, because I did have a lot of anxiety growing up about specifically whether my brother was going to be okay or whether he was going to be killed. So that I did have a lot of anxiety growing up that I didn't really deal with in the way that I probably should have, but it definitely became normalized, that anxiety.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I think something beautiful about your piece is how you're able to talk about those hard matters that happened in Brownsville, while you also talk about the joy that you were seeing every day. Could you talk a little bit about that other side of Brownsville?
Yeah, definitely. So I used to be ashamed to say that I was from Brownsville, especially for people that are from New York or specifically Brooklyn, because I was nervous about the reputation of Brownsville. And this is funny, because this was actually what my essay on to get into Georgetown was about. But
good old Common App essay.
Yeah. But I've been beginning to realize, as I've become more proud of where I came from, that Brownsville is very much a mix of sorrow but joy as well. And a lot of the thoughts that I remember of Brownsville, I do have negative thoughts of Brownsville, of course. Anyone who lives there does. But I also have these thoughts of immense joy. Most of my family lives in Brownsville. And so when I think of Brownsville, I think of family, and I think of home. And also the community aspect of Brownsville is really big. So, like, that whole saying of it takes a village to raise a child, like, that's very real in Brownsville. Like, the entire community raises the kids. So, like, I had my family there, but I also had quote-unquote extended family, who are not my blood, who are my family. Like, people who, if I'm coming back to Brownsville after college, I'll see in the elevator, and they'll be like, oh my God, Dejure, how have you been? Stuff like that. Or, like, even the people who own the corner stores, the bodegas around the neighborhood, like, they'll be like, they'll see me come in if I'm home from school, and they'll be like, you're back, how's school? Stuff like that. And so it's a neighborhood that is at, I feel like, the intersections of violence and sorrow, but also strength and resilience, because people have to continuously figure out ways to survive in a country and systems that weren't created for them to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, of course, there are people who resort to, like, drug dealing or gun violence, and even though these things aren't okay, it's because it's the only way they know how to survive. And then there are people who just survive, who have to raise their kids in a place that is under-resourced, where the public education is not at all where it should be, in a place that everyone assumes that all of the kids there and all of the people there aren't worthy or are lazy or just not working hard enough. So having to navigate that space and still being able to survive, still being able to walk outside of the street and smile every day at your neighbor, or still being able to have cookouts and laugh with the people and blast music and just have, like, my specific project has Cephalo Day, where we just, everyone in the community comes out and we just, like, celebrate each other, yeah. I guess. And I'm really close with my neighbors who live right next to me as well. They're, like, family. So, like, that community feeling, it's strength. And I feel like so too often when neighborhoods like these are discussed in, like, the news, it only focuses on that bad side. But, like, it's not all that. And, like, I didn't grow up dodging bullets or anything like that. Like, I had a very close relationship with my community in Brownsville, and I don't think I would be here if it wasn't for that.
Yeah. Would you tell me more about how this community is brought, how they helped bring you to Georgetown? How did they contribute to your journey here?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it is more so just the values that they instilled in me. So as a kid growing up, I was very, very timid. Which is, a lot of people would be surprised to hear that, knowing
yeah,
who I am.
I'm super surprised, actually.
Currently. But I was incredibly shy. I did not speak unless I was spoken to. And even then, you probably had to force me to talk. The only thing that I probably liked, weirdly, was taking pictures. I was very photogenic for some reason.
But well, you're still very photogenic.
Oh, thank you. But other than that, I was just very shy. And I think certain values. So my grandmother, she's technically my great-grandmother, but I call her grandma.
Okay.
She was the matriarch of the neighborhood, if you would call
it
that.
Wow.
Everyone
okay.
knew her. Everyone knew Juanita Rowe. She was like everybody's grandma, basically.
Okay.
And she was also a very stern woman. And so her and all of the older women in the neighborhood who were like her friends, they would sit on the bench and like gossip about everybody because that's what old women like to do. They kind of instilled in me confidence, I guess I would say, because my grandma was a very no-nonsense woman. Like, you're not getting anything past her, but she was also very loving, and all of that came from love. And she would tell me, like, Dejure, you need to speak for yourself because nobody's going to speak for you. And all of the old women in the neighborhood would, like, say that. And when I would see them, I would start to feel more comfortable speaking up for myself and saying things. So that's just one of the things, is confidence. And I don't think I would be here if I didn't have that confidence, because I would have let fear of, like, not doing well stop me. So I guess that's one of the things. And I think another thing is also just, I want to say grit, just the mm-hmm. ability to keep going.
Yeah.
Because I've watched I'm going to specifically single out the woman here, but I've watched the woman of color in my neighborhood go through so much, whether it's their son being killed by gang violence or police violence,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's, like, directly my mom, the stuff that she went through with my brother Devin. I saw her cry and then wipe her tears and pick out my stuff for school.
Yeah.
Just that strength and resilience and that ability to keep going when everything seems like it's working against you, when the country seems like it's working against you, when even people in the neighborhood seem like they may be working against you, and that ability to keep going
yeah.
in the face of all of that was something that I definitely took in as I was growing up, and I noticed. And I think subconsciously it was something that was ingrained within me. Like, you can't shut down, you know? And, like, I think I'm becoming a lot more, like, aware of taking into account, like, taking breaks, because I think that's one of the things that is, especially with Black women in the community, they're not necessarily, I want to use the word, allowed to do, is take mental breaks, because they have to keep going, they have to keep pushing, they have to keep striving for everyone else. So I've been becoming more aware of that, but I'm very appreciative of that ability to keep going. Because I don't think I would have made it past the first month at Georgetown if I didn't have that in me to okay. keep going.
That's great.
Yeah.
So kind of, again, about your community, you talk a lot about the police violence and the gang violence in your neighborhood. And I wanted to know more about how your community has come together in the light of police brutality against Black bodies in the United States, specifically Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, so Trayvon Martin was a very interesting case because, of course, there have been instances of violence and police violence against Black bodies before Trayvon Martin, Rodney King, for example. But mm-hmm. it was the first one that I was aware of. It was the first one that was making all this news and headlines.
How old were you?
I was 13, and I was in the eighth grade. And it was such a weird feeling because it was just a lot of confusion, mostly. I didn't understand why. And then also, like, this was around the time I have Facebook now. So, like, all of the reactions to Trayvon Martin's murder were readily available to me. And as we all know, quite a few of those reactions weren't anger. They were justifying. And reading that, it was just a lot of, like I said before, confusion. But my school, so I went to a predominantly, I've been to predominantly Black and Hispanic schools my entire life. And going to school, we were able to talk about it there and sort of like grapple with these things. And I had teachers who were able to explain to us the nuances of what was going on and teach us about stuff that has happened in the past that has been similar to this, and you know, all of the things that lead to Black people being gunned down by police. And while it was devastating to learn all of this, of course, it was also, I felt safe, I guess, because I had a place where I could talk about it, mm-hmm. and where I could talk about my feelings and all of the things that were confusing me. Not only could I talk about it at home with my mom, my aunt, my brothers, not only could I talk about it in my community with whoever I was with at the time, if my godmother was watching me or some lady in the community,
yeah.
But I could also go to school and I could talk about it. I could talk about it with my peers, and we could all cry or scream or just sit there bewildered like I did together. And it was sad, but it was also uplifting. Because yeah. we were all feeling that together, and we could feel it together, and we all related.
Yeah, I can really see how your community was incredibly important in during these moments. So back to kind of the structure of your piece,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was great how you integrated music into your piece. As you read through it, there are lyrics that kind of are natural transition points for the themes that you talk about. And so I guess I wanted to ask you more broadly how music plays a role in your life.
Yeah, so I am not at all a music expert. I don't pretend to be. I just listen to songs and I like them.
Yeah, just what makes you feel good.
Yeah, what makes me feel good, yeah. Exactly. But I will say that music plays a very interesting role that I wasn't even aware of until not too long ago, actually, when I got the idea to write this piece. I grew up with music. My mom is very much a big music person. Like, music, she can talk for hours about music and her favorite artist, and she blasted music all the time.
Yeah,
like,
you talk in your piece how she blasts it when she's cleaning around the house.
Yeah. I hated it so much. And, like, just recently, for example, when 444 came out by Jay-Z, I woke up from a nap, and that's what I hear blasting. Like, as soon as it came out at 12 a.m., her and my brother Devin are in the living room blasting out Jay-Z. And I'm like, of course.
That's great. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, it was great. So when I first had the thought about this piece, actually, it was in the voice office. And people were, like, talking about, like, the music or something. I can't remember exactly, but I just remember sitting there because I had no idea any of the music that they were talking about. Like, not in the slightest. I didn't know the artist. I didn't know the songs. I knew nothing. And I was just sitting there, and I was reflecting for some reason in that moment on the music that I grew up with, and how when I'm walking on campus, I always have headphones in my ears. And I was thinking, well, why is that? One of the obvious reasons is because I just like to listen to music. A lot of people walk around with headphones in their ears.
Yeah, I do that.
But I think another thing, too, when I think about the specific music that I'm listening to, particularly as I go to class or as I go to meetings or something like that, it's music that brings me back to my community and to whether specific moments or just the feeling of community. And I think that because I feel like I lack that sometimes at Georgetown, that connection, or feel disconnected to my community at home, it's like a great way for me to sort of get back into that feeling and that zone. And also, when I was trying to pick like the songs, because it was really hard to just pick a few songs to fit here, but I was specifically trying to pick certain songs that I thought that maybe not everyone reading would know. And I also intentionally didn't put the song name or lyric, or artist in it, because I thought that the fact that if someone didn't know the song, that wasn't what mattered. And that a large part of the people who wouldn't know these songs, or the demographic most likely, wouldn't be Black people. Not saying that every Black person would know these songs, because that's just not true. But like, the demographic of people who listen to this music are people who like grew up in my community, or people who grew up Black or brown. And so when someone who doesn't identify as any of those things are reading this and they may not know the songs, that was on purpose, because they also wouldn't know my experience and the experience that I have had. And that's okay, because you could still read it and comprehend what I'm saying, even though you may not necessarily relate. And so it was a very intentional decision for me to pick more songs that I thought that people may not necessarily know, besides Kendrick. And
I think it's a great like educational strategy, in the sense of, I mean, I'm not a huge rap fan in the first place, so I didn't know many of these songs, but I found as I was reading through it, I got curious about where the lyrics came from, and so I would Google the lyric, and the YouTube video would come up, and then I would listen to the song, and so I found my world expanding a little bit as I was reading the piece, which I think is a really special thing that you're giving the reader. And I really enjoyed how each song had a clear connection, whether it was thematically or whether it was thematically or whether it had something to do with the events that were happening in the little anecdote that you were telling. For each of the song, there was a connection to the text. The one song that you didn't really talk about was Same Drugs, which was the inspiration, if I'm correct, for your title.
Yeah.
Would you talk about the inspiration?
Yeah, definitely. So the title came last. And
as it usually does.
As it usually does. And when I was thinking about what... So it's funny. It actually popped up because Same Drugs came on my shuffle. And I have a sticker on my laptop that says, "Don't forget the happy thoughts." Because that song, it got me through a lot of rough times. And I think that, for one, the song lyric itself, "Don't forget the happy thoughts," just makes a lot of sense for the piece, because a lot of the piece is me trying to remember, using music to remember happier thoughts that I've had. Even if it's thoughts that surround things that are like not happy, I still remember the joy that came out of those things. And so, one, the lyric just fits with the piece, but also it's a song lyric. And so it just keeps up with like the lyrics of everything going on. So like it's a song lyric. It fits with, it completely sums up the piece, I feel like, in a clever way that isn't like directly saying this is what the piece is about. And also, Chance the Rapper is probably my second favorite artist right now, under Beyonce. Because,
okay. I was gonna ask the first. So I'm glad you got that.
100%. Destiny's Child had to go in here somewhere.
No, that was a great reference. Yeah, I like how you start with a song and you end with a song. I really think ending on a lyric, it's just a great kind of note to end on. Haha, note.
Yeah, note.
I got royalty, got loyalty inside my DNA. I feel like that's a very powerful lyric of what you've told me about how important your community at home has been for you. I think I love that you end on that lyric.
Yeah.
Something that I wanted to ask you about, on something you said previously, was just about the isolation that you've felt from the Black community that raised you. Just personally, I've missed elements of home, I've missed my family, but I've never felt isolated from my specific community. And I wanted you to talk about why you have felt that.
Yeah, so I talk about it in my piece a bit, but I knew coming into Georgetown there was going to be a lot of a different academic experience from the academic experiences I'm used to, just because I'm used to learning around Black and Hispanic people who like share my experiences, who come from similar neighborhoods to me. And so I knew that going in, but it's really, I guess, the feeling of when you sit in a class and you don't see anybody that looks like you.
It's isolating, yeah.
It's very isolating. And also, like, when something that can be, like, narrowly related to me as a Black woman is mentioned, and, like, everyone turns and looks at me, and, like, yeah. You're expected to be the spokesperson for your entire community.
Yeah. It's not fair.
Yeah, it's not fair, and it's very... It just feels very smothering, I guess is the word. Like, I just had a hard time finding that sense of belonging that I felt at home. I never felt out of place when I was at KIPP. I'm sorry, KIPP was my high school.
Okay.
But here, it just felt so odd and so different. And then walking around the campus and just having to, like, take that in every day became very mentally exhausting,
mm-hmm.
and still is quite mentally exhausting. But so yeah, I think that was the big isolation for me, was just not seeing people who would share my experiences, not seeing people who would look like me, and having to feel like I have to speak up for my community, because if no one else in the room looks like you, then no one else in the room will. So that part of it was just the most draining, I feel like.
Okay. And you know, I'm just thinking how this has been quite a journey for you, because you talked about how you started out not really speaking much, speaking only when you were prompted, and slowly you started speaking more, and now you've gotten to a place in your life where you're expected to speak on behalf of your community all the time.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that, just in the same way that never speaking was a stressful experience, having to speak all the time is also equally stressful.
Yeah, it's definitely that feeling of two extremes, that finding the balance has been difficult. I guess I found the balance more like in high school and stuff, but I think, and we talked about this earlier, but the confidence that my community has instilled in me, when I think back, always expecting to speak up, or having people expect you to speak up for your community, is exhausting. But I think that the confidence that I did learn from my grandma in particular makes that a lot less stressful than it would be for someone who may not have mm-hmm. that. Because there are a lot of people that I personally know on this campus who are Black women who don't have that confidence, and who feel like so stressed when it's there, when people expect them to speak up, which of course they do. Like, no one should have to feel that way, right? So I think that it's exhausting, but I'm more suited to handle it than like 10-year-old Dejor, who probably would have just shut down, ran under the bed, and cried for like an hour. So I definitely feel more confident in my ability to like stand up and say, hey, no, like what you're saying is wrong, if someone was to say something like wrong about, or something like a perceived notion. But just the fact that I have to makes me frustrated. But I don't think I have much problems doing so. It's just the fact that I have to.
Yeah, because your grandma. I think she sounds like a pretty amazing woman.
Yeah.
So my final question for you is, How have you been able to find another community here at Georgetown? You have your community at home, which has been so instrumental to who you are today.
Yeah.
How have you been able to find another community to support you here?
Yeah, so in a few different ways. One of the main things, I did a summer program at Georgetown 2 years ago when I was a rising senior in high school. It was called KIPP/Crystal Ray. So KIPP is the charter school network. It's the charter school network that I was in from middle school to high school. And then Crystal Ray is another, it's a Catholic schools around the country. And Georgetown has a partnership with both KIPP and Crystal Ray that takes like rising seniors to Georgetown for 3 weeks. And they do like an immersion program where you get to know how the college experience is. And I met a lot of great people during that program. But I was very lucky that five people from that program, not including myself, came to Georgetown.
Wow, so six of you from
the
program.
So six of us from the program are currently in the class of 2020. And so I mentioned my roommate. She is from that program.
Mm-hmm.
Julia. And Julia, she is from that program, and then other...
Oh, sorry, Julia's not your roommate.
Oh, no, Julia.
No, what's your roommate's name?
My roommate's name is Rakia.
Rakia,
yeah.
Awesome.
So yeah, Julia, Rakia, just if I'm going down the list, Belen, Estella, Gabby, mm-hmm. and Deja.
A few shout-outs.
And so I have been able to find an immense community in them. I don't know what I would do at Georgetown if I did not have them here.
That's great.
Because they have had similar experiences. And whenever I have, like, feel stressed from, like, class or, like, someone said something that was just outright ignorant and I had to speak up, but I felt like it was just so emotionally tolling on me, I could come back to my room and Rakia would be there and we can rant about it for hours and it just felt good. Or I could call up Julia and be like, yo, come to my room. Like, we need to talk about something that this kid in my class just said because it was stupid. And so that has been one way. And I think another way has been, funnily enough, The Voice. and I say funnily enough because The Voice, of course, is predominantly white.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people in The Voice don't share my experiences, but it's more so through my ability to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met people in The Voice who, even if they don't share my experience, they're very like willing to listen. Yeah. And that has been quite nice. I don't find myself as out of place all the time as I do in certain classes. And then finally, I think the last way is through GSP. After the election, I didn't go to any of my classes and I was just very checked out, mm-hmm. I think. And GSP hosted a little, I guess, hourglass thing where people come by and they could just talk, event. And if people don't know, GSP is the Georgetown Scholarship Program.
Yep,
it's a program for first-gen low-income students on campus that helps financially. So, like, they have resources, like, need-based resources. They'll help with, like, hospital bills, stuff like that. And then, but also, like, mentally. So they have mental services, things like that. And it's just the community on campus. And I was able to go to them and talk about my feelings in a way that I wasn't able to in class, say if I went to class or something like that. And it was a GSP staff. She no longer works for GSP, but her name is Paula. And she would have pastries with Paula.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
I would go and we would talk about everything from the more taxing stuff to Game of Thrones. So I think those are the three places that I've been find community and outlet on campus.
Awesome. Thank you, Deshore.
Thank you.
It's been such an honor for you to tell me about your experiences and for you to be so open with me. I really appreciate it. So, can you tell us where to find you on social media? On a lighter note.
I'm invisible. Just kidding. I only have a Facebook. It's Deshore Evans. That's D-A-J-O-U-R. For all of my mom's friends who thinks that my name is spelled D-A-J-O-R or D-E-J-O-U-R. it is not spelled that way. And
So hey, it takes time. My mom still cannot spell my best friend's name, and it's been years.
And also, that's the only social media I have, but I also have stuff coming out for The Voice. I co-host The Real Pulpit with Graham. We should be having a podcast coming soon. Apparently, it's Marvel versus DC. Fun. And I think that's it. That's all that I have to plug.
Great. And I'm on Facebook as Julia Pinney. And my Instagram is Julia_Pinney. Very creative, I know. So before we go, I'd like to thank bensound.com for our music and give Gustav and Parker, our stellar podcast editing team, a shout out. I hope you'll tune in for our next installment of Fresh Voices. And be sure to check out DeJour's piece in the newest issue of The Voice. Thanks for listening.